Good morning, folks. Hope you guys are having a great Wednesday morning, the day before Halloween. Hopefully the weather holds out and we have a great Halloween night for the kids. Looking forward to it. We've got a great show lined up for you today. We'll visit with the Chief Marketing Officer of New Orleans & Company, Mark Romig. We'll talk about what is up in October here in the city of New Orleans. We're coming off, we're drunk, really, on the success of the Eras Tour, which is a great thing. We have to nurse the hangover and move on now, as we still have to compete day in and day out. And we'll spend some time with Mark Romig talking about that. Michael Heck joins us. A lot going on in the city as we still continue to prepare for the Super Bowl and other big events in the city, as well as a lot of great business opportunities that have been created. We'll talk about that. And in the back half of the hour, we'll visit with Emily Egan, Director of Strategic Initiatives at the Freeman School of Business, the Albert LePage Center for Entrepreneurship and Innovation. Most recent report comes out talking about these startups and the health of same. Darlene Costanza will visit us. Crime Stoppers joins with the U.S. Marshals Service and others. We'll talk about that for Operation Boudat, and that's going after wanted sex offenders. And this is something that has been going on for years and has been very, very successful. And obviously, we thank all of the individuals that have been participating with this. I wanted to talk about a couple of things. First thing I wanted to talk about was the criminal sheriff, Susan Hudson, the other day testified before the council as to her budget and the necessity for more money relative to the housing of inmates. And there was an interesting observation that she made, basically that we're overcrowded. She says in large measure that's due to Troop NOLA and obviously some of the incredible cases that have been made by other law enforcement agencies within the city, especially the NOPD. That's a good thing. And this comes from a woman who said that the optimal number for the size of the jail is 500. Nobody ever really believed that, right? And we oftentimes talk about, why is crime down? Well, it could be, maybe, because we put more people in jail. It's amazing when you selectively incapacitate impact criminals what actually happens out on the street of your community. And still to this day, we are those that are not connect. We have those that are not connecting the dots. They stare the obvious in the face and they walk right around it. Obviously, from my perspective, the city council's got to figure out how to fund this office. It's always been a challenge. But it is key to the success of the crime-fighting efforts of the NOPD and others within the territorial boundaries of the city of New Orleans. And I hope that they're able to figure this out, move forward, get it done in quick fashion. Interesting observation also made by the sheriff, and an appropriate one, I think, as well. The cost to house an inmate exceeds the cost of a deputy. There's something wrong with that formula, right? We need to pay these people. We need to pay them an appropriate amount of money. It's not easy working in the jail. It's hard to find people to go in that jail or any jail in this country for that amount of money. We need to figure that out as well. Because if you're going to have a good, stable prison complex, jail complex, excuse me, it starts with the quality of the individuals that are working frontline within the confines of the jail each and every day. And it's not easy working in the jail. For those of us who have spent a lot of time working in a jail, we know. And the fact of the matter is you are outnumbered. And there are folks that are there that consider it a badge of honor to make you look like a fool, to make you look like an idiot, and to try and have you make a mistake that inures to the detriment of a fellow prisoner or inures to the benefit of the inmate that's trying to make you look like a fool. It's a hell of an atmosphere and environment to work in, right, where you're mocked every day, 24/7, and they're always looking to see not only your weakness but a weakness in the system. And for those reasons and so many others, I could go on for an hour. We hope that the New Orleans City Council is able to work this out with Sheriff Susan Hudson. And maybe now she recognizes the direct correlation between the selective incapacitation of impact criminals and the crime rate in the city. And if you make good quality arrests, you lock folks up, send them off, that you're going to see a reduction in crime. I wanted to talk a little bit about the election, voting. I am incredibly proud of the system in the state of Louisiana. I don't know about you, but it seems as though early voting in this state went without a hitch. I'm sure there were some little nuance issues that they get resolved. Having worked within that system and a number of the players that are still involved in this system, they're a credit to what we do. Louisiana has not been the subject of contempt or criticism as it relates to our election laws and the manner in which we conduct our elections. I think we had record turnouts in early voting. And I just want to congratulate the Secretary of State, the respective clerk of courts, and obviously the Registrar of Voters Office, all of whom participated in this endeavor of early voting in the state of Louisiana. I voted the other day at the Yenny building and got to see a lot of police officers that I used to work with. They had a lot of security on hand. They were prepared for any kind of issue that was going to possibly crop up there. Didn't hear of any, which is a good thing. I talked to a couple of them. It seems as though everything went without a hitch. It should be commended. And along those lines, it was interesting, you know, when we go back a couple of years back to Georgia, everyone talked about that the reformation of the election laws in Georgia were going to be a problem. In fact, our sitting president, Joe Biden, described it as Jim Crow on steroids. Others talked about how this was all about voter suppression. They even lost an all-star game. Major League Baseball succumbed to what ridiculous pressure there was out there, or perceived pressure out there, and pulled the game. Interestingly, they have announced that their return to Atlanta in 2025. I guess that's their way of saying they were wrong. Maybe they ought to give them two all-star games, right? To really show that they mean what they say when they were wrong. And it was good to hear, because what has happened is the record number of people voting in Georgia without a problem. It's amazing how that works. When your voter rolls are sacrosanct, your policies and procedures are in place, you actually enforce them, you make sure that people are who they say they are, things tend to go without a hitch. And, you know, in a survey that was conducted after the 2022 election, it revealed that no one had a bad experience voting. And when it came to black voters, there were zero complaints. It's amazing how that works. When the rules are actually enforced, the rules are fair, so that you have an election system that's sacrosanct, as much as it can be, because you have human intervention. But the fact of the matter is, it proved itself. And even Donald Trump tried to influence and actually supported folks that put into place, that conducted the election and then put into place some of the reformation, supported other candidates to try and defeat him. And what happened? Georgia voters said, take a walk. It's not going to happen. This is what we want. This is how it needs to happen. We've identified problems and we've remediated it. So even from a bipartisan perspective, there were people that were unhappy with it all, which is probably good. But the fact of the matter is, people are voting. People are voting, and they're not feeling any pressure from anyone or anything else. They removed the possibility of a lot of influences that were totally unnecessary. And people just want to mind their own business, go stand in line, and go vote. right? And the country will be better for it. So I was encouraged this morning to learn that the Supreme Court allows Virginia to remove non-citizens from voter rolls before the election. Now, keep in mind, this is incredible to me. These folks, roughly 1,600 of them at the present time, were non-citizens. Okay? They self-admitted that they were not a citizen. Nobody went out and conducted an investigation to see whether or not they were or they weren't. There was no systematic investigation of this. They admitted on their application that they were not a citizen. Federal government quickly steps in and files an action for a TRO that was issued by the district court. It was embraced by the appellate court. They take it to the Supreme Court. And, of course, on a 6-3 vote, the three Democrats saying, oh, no, we shouldn't do this. The state law says that there's a 90-day quiet period. But what the state law says of eligible voters, they self-admitted that they're not eligible. So the ridiculous outcome would be, no, they have to stay on the voter rolls, right? You know that they're not eligible. So they appear at a precinct to vote. What is one to do? Well, obviously, the right thing to do is you can't vote. Right? But there were those that wanted to create this conflict so that it could possibly go on and we could challenge something in Virginia. Because Virginia is all over the map right now as to whether or not it's going to go Republican, Democrat, or otherwise. Who knows? But who, it doesn't really matter. I mean, when someone says in their application and answers the question that makes them ineligible, how in the world could a competent court say, oh, no, you can't take the remedial action when they self-admit that they actually shouldn't have even put the application in? I mean, when you think about this, this gets to the point of being crazy. Then we get to Nevada. And I know a lot of folks don't pay attention to any of this, but we probably should. In Nevada, they mail a ballot to everyone that is a registered voter. To everyone, whether you asked for it or not. You can still go vote in person, and then they work out the conflicts, I guess, after the fact. But everyone gets a ballot. And it was interesting that in the 2020 election, just in Clark County, where Las Vegas is, there were 92,000 ballots that were sent to the wrong address. 92,000. So 92,000 folks that received these ballots that were not the person that it was addressed to could have voted. No one knows. And in fact, upon further review, after a lawsuit was threatened by an organization, they discovered that a whole lot of voters were registered at casinos, vacant lots, gas stations, strip clubs, business parks, and at your local McDonald's and fast food joints. So ultimately, as a result of the threat of the suit, Las Vegas election officials moved commercial addresses from the rolls, right? You have to be a resident. You can't live at a McDonald's, right? But there's still other counties in Nevada that have not complied. The lawsuit was against Clark County. This continues to be a problem. In fact, after the 2022 midterm elections, Nevada Secretary of State admitted that 95,556 ballots were sent to undeliverable or bad addresses. Where did these ballots go? Were these ballots sent in? Were these ballots counted? Even folks that have embraced voting by mail, several states, Colorado, Washington State, Oregon, and others, those election officials in those states themselves readily admit that if the voter rolls are not sacrosanct, that you're not always conducting audits several times a year on voter rolls, how that data comes in, whether or not it's valid, whether or not it's a valid address, and you try to validate these things, mail-in ballots can be very, very dangerous. And in fact, in all of those states that expanded the use of mail-in voting, they all went through an audit process to clean up their voter rolls. And what they found in that process is a database that was replete with problems. And in fact, one of the states had to delay doing so because that database was corrupted to the extent that it was going to take a lot longer time to clean it up. What do you call that? It's called due diligence. It's called common sense. When you care about the sanctity of the election process, these are the things that you do. It's interesting that we would have elected officials that would be contrary to this notion, contrary to due diligence. In fact, in Nevada, the court just ruled the other day, the state law says that mail-in ballots have to be postmarked by the day of the election. That's what the state law reads. Interestingly, they've said that the election secretary of state there says that they want to be able to count unmarked mail-in ballots until Friday after the election. The election's on Tuesday. If they receive it on Friday and there's not a postmark, or on Wednesday or Thursday, they want to still be able to count the ballot. It's interesting, DOJ's not in Nevada contesting this like they did in Virginia, right? Of course, Nevada is run by Democrats in large measure. And the large cities there are run by Democrats. And it's, you know, it's further interesting that no one did the due diligence to check with the postmaster there, because there's a process now in post offices. They don't postmark every piece of mail. So your state law is out of date. And now you want to take the remedial measures on the eve of an election when you've not done your due diligence, and you want to erode the confidence in the election process because you just automatically mail out these ballots to folks not knowing that the intended individual or who it's addressed to is actually the person handling the piece of mail. And you want to further complicate this system by saying, well, we weren't aware that they don't postmark, and the post office may not have the capacity to clear every piece of mail by a postmark. So we need to make the accommodation as it relates to that issue right now here on the eve. And most interesting about all of this is that the recent experience is that they, over the last 4 years, have consistently sent out ballots to people at wrong addresses, addresses that don't exist, addresses of commercial property, and the list goes on and on and on and on. And we wonder why we have no confidence in our election system. And for these reasons, it's why I'm so very excited that Louisiana seems to have it together as it relates to election processes. And I thank all of those involved for saying. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. We are joined by two of my favorite organizations, Crime Stoppers and the U.S. Marshal's Office. Darlene Cassanza, President and CEO, and Brian Fair, Deputy U.S. Marshal. Folks, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Darlene, are you there?
Hello. Yes, sorry.
Yes. Okay.
Thanks, Newell. Nice to be on the show.
She had me on mute. I'm sorry. It's okay.
I was taking a tip. I'm sorry.
Hopefully, relative to Operation Boudat, it's something that has been going on for a number of years. Tell us about this year's experience.
Well, we have been such a, so honored to be a partner with the U.S. Marshals and their task force in this particular thing, Operation Boudat, which happens around this time of year because obviously it's dealing with non-registered compliant sex offenders. And we do have some other individuals on our spread this year, which we'll talk about later. But it's important that families and the victims' families know that this has not been forgotten, this person we're trying to bring to justice. And, of course, it represents different agencies, which I know Brian will tell us about the different agencies, but it's very far-reaching. And if anybody knows what the U.S. Marshals, do, I mean, they're the ones who a lot of times go after the worst of the worst. And I will say that the song, Bad Boys, Bad Boys, I think also was made with them in mind because they don't stop. And we certainly appreciate that, Brian. You'll do an incredible job.
Thank you.
Absolutely. I've always said that the U.S. Marshal's office could find a tick on the ass of a donkey in the middle of the Mojave Desert. And I mean that with all seriousness because they have found people that we had difficulty finding for a long time. And I always appreciated their effort. Brian, tell us about what's going on.
Well, first, I wish that was totally true, the tick comment. We can find a lot of people, so we still have a few people that elude us. But with Operation Boudat, we've been doing this operation in some way, shape, or form since around 2009, 2010. Originally, it started as just a Halloween thing with compliance checks and a few warrants for failure to register as a sex offender. And then over time, it morphed into a fall thing. Now it runs fall and into early winter. Because there's quite a few targets that we have during the operation. So we devote more time and resources to going after these sex offenders that are in violation of the registry. We also work quite a few open sex-based cases, open rapes against children, against adults, etc. There's some domestic violence stuff mixed in along with other violent offenders.
So obviously, there's some folks that are still out there. Tell it, if you would, for the benefit of the listening audience, there are a number of tiers as it relates to these individuals and how long they have to register for. Tell us a little bit about that.
So, sure, there are three tiers of sex offenders, and the tiers are done by, I believe, either the Louisiana State Police or the Attorney General's office, and that classification is based on the offense that the person is convicted of. So a Tier 1 offender would have to register for 15 years. A Tier 2 offender would have to register for 25 years. And then a Tier 3 sex offender would have to register for a lifetime.
And that's based on the severity, right?
Spread.
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, well, it is definitely in the severity. And what I want folks to understand the serious nature of this, because on this spread that we have, and of course there's others that the marshals are going after, we have 13 Tier 3, which is lifetime registry that are registered targets that are non-compliant. And if people want to see the charges, I mean, all of this information is on our website, crimestoppersgno.org. But we're looking for folks who have some very serious charges against them. And of the targets that we have, 17 involve juveniles.
So give us some examples, Darlene.
Well, on here, and we looked through the list yesterday very carefully because some of the individuals have been non-compliant for a while. And there's two individuals actually who's been here, I think Brian, probably 10 years. Both wanted for one, certainly with a juvenile, juvenile rape. The second one was multiple counts of rape. And they are Brian Vincino, I never can say this, Angelita,
yeah,
and Elda Paz.
Angelita, yeah.
and Elda Paz has been with us, and that we're really hoping that some new information can come on. We also have an individual who's wanted for murder. He's not related with a sex offender. It's Lloyd Jones. And Brian, do you want to give a history on Lloyd?
Yeah, so Lloyd Jones is wanted for the alleged murder of his girlfriend in Jefferson Parish, and he also wounded her father. He also has several federal warrants out for him. He has a federal warrant out for him for narcotics distribution, as well as another federal warrant for violating his federal supervised release on another conviction. So we believe he's extremely dangerous. He could be anywhere in the U.S. He also may have fled to Mexico or Central America as well. but he's been a fugitive for some time. One of our best fugitive investigators has worked that case tirelessly, and just we haven't been able to get any info to locate him as of yet.
Lloyd Jones, date of birth 9/22/1977.
Correct.
I guess he was living in Jefferson Parish, right, at one time.
He was correct. Yes, he was living in Jefferson Parish. Had some domestic issues with his. I don't know if it was his girlfriend or estranged girlfriend, and basically did a home invasion at her residence, or is alleged to, where he murdered her and then shot her father as well, and then fled.
Now, you guys always have this around Halloween, and there's a good reason for that. Let's talk about that.
Well, I mean, just Halloween time is a time to remind people while they're doing trick-or-treating with kids that these people are out there, so you should be aware of them. You can't be like an ostrich with your head in the sand. You need to realize these people are out there and take steps to protect your kids. There's certain things you can do. Go trick-or-treating with them, monitor their social media use, things like that. So it's just a good reminder. And, I mean, we do this work all year long, but we ramp it up during this time of year.
And then certainly you can register online with the different agencies. I mean, so the state police has a registry that you can sign up for to receive alerts. And I know Jefferson Parish has it on their sheriff's office has it on their site, but you can actually sign in to be to receive alerts when somebody who moves into your area, who's, you know, a registered sex offender, is living within a 3-mile radius. But it's important as parents that you receive this information so you can see the pictures and you know, kind of just to have, if you need to have that conversation with your child, you can have that conversation. And then again, these people are not supposed to be participating in, you know, trick-or-treating. They're not supposed to have lights on their porches so that they're encouraging kids to come up. They're not supposed to be masked. There's a lot of things that to protect, you know, the innocent victims from becoming victimized by these individuals.
The operation started October 22nd and will conclude on January 18th of 2025. Have y'all arrested anyone since it started, Brian?
Yes, we've had 5 arrests so far, and we currently have another lead out to Florida. I won't say where in Florida, on a New Orleans Police Department open case for a sexual battery. So we're at 5 currently, and that's it may not sound like a lot, but those 5, along with other arrests we're making every day, right now the guys are out working an active murder case. We picked up somebody else this morning for weapons charges for not appearing in court in Orleans Parish. So every day we're out there doing stuff. So like I said, we're just devoting a little extra time and resources to this area. So 5 currently, and we expect to have a lot more by the end of the operation.
And we actually just released our list yesterday, Newell. So for the citizens who are interested in seeing this information, it just went out publicly yesterday. And I'll say we got a tip in on one of the suspects, and within less than 24 hours, the marshals had made that arrest. So it's incredible how quickly they respond, how they're able to do their jobs. And I guess the most important thing for individuals looking at the list, you do get a reward if you come through Crime Stoppers. So you're going to get $1,000 paid to you if your information leads to that arrest.
And they have the picture of every one of these individuals that I wanted. I did want to point out this is a collaborative effort between the U.S. Marshals Service, Crime Stoppers, the JPSO, Jefferson Parish Sheriff's Office, Kenner Police Department, New Orleans Police Department, Orleans Parish Sheriff's Office, St. Bernard Parish Sheriff's Office, St. Tammany Parish Sheriff's Office. And importantly, somebody that we don't often talk about, but Brian, I'd like you to comment on it, and you too, Darlene, Louisiana Probation and Parole. And I used to love to partner up with those folks. They're really good at what they do as well, and they have certain rights to do things that traditional law enforcement doesn't, and it plays really a critical and integral role in going out and incapacitating these individuals.
So we've been working with Louisiana Probation and Parole since our task force started in 1999. We have an excellent relationship with them. They're very helpful. If the person's on probation and parole, there's other parameters that they're able to follow that we're not able to follow on other cases, as revolves to searches of their address and stuff or residence. But, we've had an excellent relationship with them. They've made some great cases along the way since 1999 with us. And I actually was a former state probation officer for at one point a long time ago.
Well, then you know, right? I mean, and it was eye-opening for me, and I should have known because actually my dad was a state probation officer for a short period of time back in the early 60s. And it was amazing some of the information that they had that we didn't tap into. And when we had developed our Criminal Intelligence Center, probation and parole came in, and it was just amazing some of the stuff that they were able to bring forward.
Yeah, the officers go out regularly. They do checks of the probationers or parolees, so they're able to provide intel on addresses, family members, things like that. It's very helpful in hopefully locating people.
So final thoughts, Darlene?
Just really encourage folks to pay attention to these searches, and you know, if they can go ahead and look again, it's crimecybersgno.org, or there's a link, I'm sure, from your show over to the Facebook page. We are featuring each individual, you know, during the week, you know, a little bit more detail on each individual. But again, the marshals, what they do with this is incredible, and on behalf of the victims, you know, to know that these individuals are being brought to justice so they cannot be victimized again or new victims. It's incredibly important that we all be on the same team. So, again, U.S. Marshals, thank you so much. Thank you to all the task force members for making a difference in our community.
I think folks, Brian, would be a little bit surprised when they look at this list. They're going to find elderly people, mid-age people, young people, men, women. As I look at this list, I mean, it could be anybody's neighbor, you know, by the looks of these folks.
Yep, it's a wide variety of people that are on the list, and like Darlene said, several of them are actually wanted on open sex-based charges as well. Like Javier Cabrera, he cut off his ankle monitor the night before trial last October, a year ago, so he's been on the run for a while. We've been unable to locate him, but so like, you know, it could be your neighbor, exactly, anywhere. The person could move out the area, come back or something, so... We rely on tips from the public and our partner agencies to hopefully capture these people.
And that was felony charges of first-degree rape of a child and indecent behavior with a juvenile under 13. So, you know, when we talked about this, yes, Brian, this is serious issues that we need to make sure that we bring to justice.
No doubt, for sure. Thank you all both for what you do, and we truly appreciate you coming on and sharing this data with us. And much success, Brian and Darlene, to this initiative. And thank you again.
Thank you for spotlighting it for us. Thank you.
All righty, folks. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Got a couple of texts from people saying, why don't you go to the talk lines after your monologue? Well, we can. We do. So when we come back, you got something to say. Let's talk about it. We'll be right back. It's going to be interesting. Yesterday we talked about the Boeing strike, and we still haven't put to rest the longshoreman strike, and it will be very interesting to see how this is played out. In fact, most recently, as a result of some investigative reporting, there's been some really interesting details that have been revealed about this Longshoremen's Association and executives and how much they're paid. It seems that the only way to successfully run this union is to be very insular. In other words, Harold Daggett, the president, has to make sure that all of his family members are, in fact, hired by the union and paid by the union, right? 30 top executives with the union, which were classified in their reporting at their headquarters in North Bergen, had been paid over $9 million in salary and other compensation, according to the Department of Labor reports. President Harold Daggett received over $855,000 in compensation last year for his leadership duties. But he was also paid another $190,000+ as president emeritus of the local that he left when he was elected as president. Kind of a sweet deal, adding up to about $1 million in compensation. His son, Dennis, was paid $785,000+ for his dual leadership roles of being the president of a local and the ILA executive vice president. His other son, John, was paid over $640,000 for serving as vice president of the ILA Atlantic Coast District and the dual role that he played at the local 1804-1. which is the same place that Dennis has a dual road. And then the president's daughter, Lisa Daggett Bess, she made over $200,000 as a union's political affairs director. So it seems as though this is a very insular thing, and that this single family has this increasing influence as it relates to the longshoremen's union. Why is that? Do you think they went out and they tried to get the best and the brightest to be there? Or is this insular for some other reason? One has to ask, right? One would want to know. I know if I was a union member, I'd certainly like to know what's going on there. And, you know, this particular president has said, don't F with the maritime unions around the world. We will shut you down. Federal filings reveal that the union, and not all union members are entitled to go to the convention, spent over $6 million to stage the convention. And they charged over $200,000 on airline tickets, $45,000 on limousines, and over $500,000 on merchandise and marketing materials for the conventioners. And they paid a Maryland company over $1 million to help stage, and 40 union dignitaries who served as sergeant at arms for the 4-day meeting were paid over $300,000. And some former union members who actually had spent a little time in the big house were also paid some money for coming to the convention. And I mean, the list just goes on and on and on about other union members, their son, their family members, and such, as their expenses being paid for. And it's absolutely incredible. When you start adding up the benefit package for the union executives, that include membership fees at the New York Athletic Club, Yankee tickets to the tune of $131,500, and it just continues going on and on, and you shake your head, you scratch your head, and you're totally mystified by who would be willing to put up with this largesse for the benefit of a handful of people, roughly 30. 30 people living at large on the backs of laborers who are contributing to this excess that is going on relative to this organization. And you wonder whose interests are actually being represented here, for sure. We will be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. All right, folks, when we return after the top of the hour news break, we're going to visit with the Michael Heck, president and CEO of GNO Inc., as well as Emily Egan, director of strategic initiatives at the Freeman School of Business, Albert LePage Center for Entrepreneurship and Innovation at Tulane University, discussing their most recent report about startups in our metro area. And at 12 o'clock, we'll visit with Mark Romig, Chief Marketing Officer of New Orleans & Company. Stay with us. We will be right back.